Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to another episode of the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lasseviff. Joining me, as always, are my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. There's one of them now. If only Kurt Russell wasn't 17 and not acting in adult movies, he would come to save you.
Wow, amazing. John, let me get say hi to everyone.
Hey, everybody, how's it going? I'm just enjoying a nice cranberry Red Bull, which is the official drink of Kurt Russell.
Now, if you guys, I wish the audience could see the look on Living Good's face right now. He has the biggest smile. This is the first time he's ever drank a cranberry Red Bull. And I think he's going through revelation right now. Living Good, what's going through your mind? I just have to know.
You know what? I kind of feel like Kurt Russell and the real hero of the story in Big Trouble in Little China felt when they were on that elevator after they drank that potion. I kind of feel invincible right now.
Yeah, you're just...
I think we're sort of feeding off your vibe. Like, I'm feeling pretty good right now, too.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, actually. Just send me some of that cranberry Red Bull. But I digress. Today's podcast is not about Red Bull. What today's podcast is about George A. Romero, specifically Romero's zombie anthology.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it could also be about Red Bull, though, because this stuff does taste magical, and it could create zombies. Like, this would put life.
Don't get addicted to it. Don't get addicted to it.
If you think about it, guys, the remakes of all the films feature fast zombies who could technically be on Red Bull.
There you go. I mean, people always make the jokes like, you know, like when 28 Days Later came out, they're like, it's a zombie on steroids. Well, maybe it's just a zombie on too much Red Bull.
You know what I've always wondered? Like, if you're really drunk and a vampire drinks your blood, does a vampire get drunk? Well, what if a zombie eats a guy who just chugged a bunch of Jaeger bombs?
Then they start walking. Do they actually get worse at walking than they already were? Like, they're already banging into everything they walk by.
Or maybe they just walk faster. They start to run.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it says it gives you wings. So maybe zombies, you know, it makes their synapses or whatever still functioning and they work a little bit better.
So if a zombie ate a tweaker, they would start moving regular speed.
I think so, but then it would wear off and the zombie would start feeling weird and wanting more of a certain substance.
Right. Well, actually, this brings up an interesting question. If the guy who is drinking tons of Jaeger bombs gets eaten by the zombie, but say like his lower half only remains, would the lower half become reanimated? But then, like, because it's still fueled on Jaeger bombs, would it just like run everywhere?
Yeah, it would be like the Rolling Stones now. Like, they're still fueled with drugs they did. Hey, they're like my favorite band. I just had to make that joke out there.
Right.
But you know what, though? If I was on Red Bull and vodka, I don't think a zombie could catch me.
No.
Because I remember one college night back in 2003 when I was actually fueled on Jaeger bombs where I literally ran home 2 miles from a club.
What about the World War Z zombies?
I could get them for about a quarter mile.
The 28 Days Later zombies.
Oh, I would just – I would be so scared. Well, no, you know what? If I was fueled on Jaeger bombs, I wouldn't be too scared of them. I think I could outrun them too.
But what if the zombies were also fueled on Jaeger bombs?
You'd be dead.
See, I could outpace the other one. So it'd be like a real – they'd get me. I'd die.
Well, I think the question is whose heart would explode first, you or the zombies?
Wait, did the zombies get Mark? No, he was running from one. His heart blew up.
Yeah. And then the zombies blew up too. How many Jaeger bombs did they drink?
Way so, like, much. Is that like a zombie killer? Just get them loaded up on Red Bull?
Give
them the rejects. Give them like Monster and all that crap because I'm saving the Red Bull for myself.
All right, guys. I'm going to try to get this podcast somewhat back on track. I think for today's Romero podcast, we will be going through six of his zombie movies: Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, and Survival of the Dead. I'm sensing a theme here. I don't know. I think a good place to start is the first movie. What do you think, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Night of the Living Dead, which came out in 1968. So this is the part of the podcast where I sound totally amateurish, but did we discuss like doing the listener questions before or after the discussion?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got one right now.
All right,
yeah.
Cool. We got a listener question for Night of the Living Dead.
I just want everyone to know that right now, Lazavath is drinking Mountain Dew and not Red Bull. Thus,
right.
He's going to be kind of maybe one, two steps behind.
But then and it's not like, even Code Red. It's regular Mountain Dew.
What? What do you have? Do you have a problem with Mountain Dew Classic?
You're like a rookie among geeks.
Okay. Well, if he was a super geek, it'd be a 2 liter of Mountain Dew right next to him right now.
That's right, with Funyuns in his other hand.
All right, so the first question comes from Red Bull Fury. No, I'm joking. It comes from Donnie V, and the question goes like this. It goes, in the 1968 classic Night of the Living Dead, why don't they just pull up the stairs and hang out upstairs so the zombies can't get to them?
Wait, I actually got a question, because I haven't seen this movie in a long time. Was the second floor, you could actually pull up the stairs like they were attic stairs?
No, like...
No, they were regular stairs.
Yeah, take a crowbar, and instead of spending all that time hammering stuff on windows that are inevitably going to get pounded through...
Just literally destroy the stairs. Yeah, destroy them. Like
one at a time. I mean, there's like four abled men there. Just pull up the stairs, and then they hang out upstairs. Take everything upstairs. You know why? Because they hadn't read Max Brooks' Zombie Survival Guide yet.
This is a very good idea, but this is one of those ideas that only comes from having already seen the catastrophe happen and you had time to think about it, you know? Like, it's not like anyone was saying that the moment that the zombies started coming to the house.
And that's why I love Night of the Living Dead. Like, you watch it now, and it's like, this is weird, but it's almost like the first Fast and the Furious. Like, before it became supercharged and bigger than life, and I mean, it was so naive. These people, they didn't really know what to do. Like, this was all new. And even George Romero didn't even know what to do. Like, if you think about that scene, the first zombie was actually fast chasing a car. And then the rest of the zombies in the rest of the film were really slow. So, actually, let me break it down. So, Night of the Living Dead is about several survivors inside a house surviving an initial zombie outbreak. They have no idea if the zombies are fast or slow. They don't know what they want. They don't know how they eat flesh. They don't know how it happened. It's basically just the initial outbreak. And this, there have been zombie films before in like 1932 about, you know, Santeria or voodoo and various like zombies. But this was like the first with like the flesh eating, the ghouls, when hell is full, the zombies come out. And so this like started a revolution in 1968.
And the other thing is that all those movies, and there were dozens before Night of the Living Dead, all those movies, the zombies were, they were kind of raised as acts of vengeance. Mm-hmm. Like they pertain to like a voodoo or a magical like culture or mythology. So yeah, it was nothing like these monstrous contagious beasts that we see here.
Yeah, and I mean, like I love about Night of the Living Dead is like they're on the news, right? And this guy's like, do you think you could have this wrapped up in 24 hours? But you know what's crazy though? This movie, a little black and white film, it was made in the era of Rosemary's Baby, 2001, Butch Cassidy, Wild Bunch, Midnight Cowboy, Easy Rider. And you have all these crazy auteur films. But back in the day, this little PG, G-rated film was like a revelation. Like little kids were going – like Roger Ebert watched it in a movie theater with a bunch of little kids. And he said, the kids in the audience were stunned. There was almost complete silence. The movie had stopped being delightfully scary about halfway through and had become something unexpectedly terrifying. There's a little girl across the aisle from me, maybe 9 years old, who was sitting very still in her seat and crying. I don't think that younger kids really knew what hit them. They were used to going to the movies, sure, and they had seen some horror movies before, but this was watching something else. This was ghouls eating people. You could see what they were eating. That little girl, she killed her mom with a spade. But if you watch it now, it's tame. But back in the day, this was like the perfect like midnight movie, drive-in. I mean, this movie had more legs on. I mean, this was probably in the theater for a couple of years.
But yeah, and at the time they were calling it gory, and now we look back and it's like, you know, I'm kind of bored, but I realize why it's so iconic and important.
Yeah, we watched the movie a couple weeks ago in preparation for this podcast. And it just struck me how tame the zombies looked, as you guys previously mentioned. At first I didn't realize that was a zombie who initially attacked Barbara in the beginning of the movie. I thought it was just some dude, just some drunk dude.
Yeah,
you know, just me on a Saturday night.
Though that's perfect, yeah. Because even though we look back at it, and it was kind of because of the limitations of the budget and the limitations of the existing canon of horror movies, so makeup hadn't evolved as far. There were fewer monsters out there like this, but at the same time, our perspective became more like the victims. They just saw someone behaving weird. They had no reason to think it was something monstrous or something dangerous. They thought it was a drunk dude.
Yeah. And you know what I love? This little film was limited by budget, location. And so you have this movie that has influenced. How many zombie films do you think there have been? Thousands?
God.
Yes. There's been thousands. And this movie influenced all these. And it was like this little tiny horror film that – and George Romero was flying by the seat of his pants. Like, these guys making this film – we're like making stuff up on the day and out of convenience. So all these people are like, the first running zombie is the zombie from the beginning, but then the zombies change. Like, they studied his art, but when Romero gets interviewed, he was like, I was just making an independent film.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that's something that happens in so many movies anyway, though, and that's that it doesn't matter if it's a zombie's speed or a guy's ability to fight in a martial arts movie. In general, how do I put this? The zombie is as dangerous as the situation, or the zombie is as fast as it needs to be scary at the time. When you watch a martial arts movie, when there's one bad guy, it becomes a one-on-one fight that lasts 5 minutes. When there's 20 bad guys, each bad guy takes 3 seconds to dispatch. You know what I mean? So they modify the scene and therefore the speed of the zombie, the strength of the zombie, the menace of the zombie, or the desperation of the person being chased by the situation. And then that's drama. That's why we call it drama.
And like, I just think that this movie was a big gut punch for the world, and it came out at the perfect time. So guys, this is gonna be like my favorite aspect of the film, and this is what won me Romero's support forever. Now, he cast Dwayne Jones as the lead in the film, and this was 1968 during the civil rights movement. You know, Sidney Poitier was pretty much the only black man acting on screen. So he cast Dwayne Jones as the lead. And what I love most about this movie is, which rarely happens, is he just plays a guy. Like, they don't bring up the race. They don't bring up any of that. He is just and like, so many people have researched it, saying like, oh, his role was incredibly important during the civil rights movement. And there's a scene where he slaps a white woman and where no one brings up the race and all this. But what I love most is when Romero was interviewed about it, and I love this. He's like, he just gave the best audition. Like, seriously, Dwayne Jones was a stage actor, this great actor, and he just gave the best audition. So Romero was like, I like him. Let's cast him.
Yeah.
And that decision has been like studied for 40 years. And I think that's almost more progressive, that Romero was just like, I liked him as an actor, so I cast him. He played a man. And like, I love that.
So you're saying Romero is just the butterfly effect personified. Everything he does has a huge impact later on.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to belittle the boldness in that casting decision, but here's another thing, is that you don't necessarily realize this, but or that is, fans don't necessarily realize this, but George Romero, unless you've seen him like in photos or at a fan event, like, he's a very tall man. He's like 6'6" or so. So the thing is that even though it was a time of a little bit of racial conflict, I'm going to say a little just compared to the 50s. No, compared to the 50s.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, like, it's less, even though it's still intense by all means compared to how we live now. But he's like 6'6". So he's one of the last people on the block who would be intimidated by this big, strong, you know, Dwayne Jones when he comes into audition. He's not your typical guy doing casting in Hollywood. You don't think that could have a psychological aspect? Just the fact that he, of all people, wouldn't be intimidated by him.
No, I think he just liked his audition. I think.
Oh, no, no. I agree with that, too.
I think he just was a progressive dude that didn't need a pat on the back. Like, I think he just saw, I like this guy. Let's put him in the movie. And no, I love it. Like, you know, I was watching the Descent commentary that for that great horror film, The Descent. And the character Juno, she's I know she's New Zealand, she's from New Zealand, but she's of Asian descent. And she was like, it was just nice to play a character who wasn't defined by being Asian. She's like, they never brought up my race. So I mean, 40 years later, they're still, people are still like not getting a role like Dwayne Jones got. And I love that about it. I love that like the butterfly effect happened and it became studied, and then Romero was just sitting back going, whatever. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was just, I don't know. There's this joke where the black guy always gets killed in a horror movie. He's usually the first one.
That's right, yeah.
I think it's interesting in this movie, you know, Dwayne Jones, Ben, you know, who happens to be black, he's the last survivor, spoiler alert, in this movie. I just thought that was, I don't know. I just, when I saw it, I'm just like, it didn't really hit me until like I thought about it afterwards. I'm like, oh, yeah. Well, no. I was wondering if Romero did that as kind of a middle finger to everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, they hadn't even like set that precedent yet, and yeah. Like he defied it. And it's crazy at the end how they just shoot him casually. Like they see him, they probably think he's a spook, and then they kill him. It was just such a gut punch. And then they showed the newsreel at the end. So if you're in 1968 and you're used to like Hammer horror films and Bela Lugosi and stuff like that, and then this movie happens to you, you're sitting in a theater going, "What did I just watch?"
Yeah. I'll bet. I mean, this movie was kind of getting a lot of negative criticism right off the bat because of, well, at the time anyway, the goriness and the brutality. And mm-hmm. Again, we giggle at it now, yeah. But at the time, it was a bit of a lag. I think when I was reading, they said it took a couple months for it to find fanfare and critical acclaim in lieu of negative criticism about this shouldn't have been made.
Yeah. And this was actually really supported by critics. Like critics actually started watching this and going like, you know, some were like, it's incredibly gory, don't watch it. But some were like, it's gory, but it's good.
Yeah, it currently has a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty good for a horror movie.
You know, I'm especially surprised because so many young people are voting on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, and the most young people, like, they're just like, Halloween, I don't get it. Nightmare, you know, these classic horror movies, like, I don't get it. The new one was better. And really, the new one just had louder noises and more gore slopping on the floor. Like, I don't get it. It's not scary.
I don't like this person who you just made up, Levengood.
You know, it's a lot of young people. Honestly, you know, I have trouble watching old black and white, you know, dramas. I have a lot of difficulty enjoying them. And I think it's just the same for these kids in horror nowadays. Not you kids who are listening to us. You kids are great.
Right.
I mean, I just think it came out at the right time, the right place, the right era, the right casting. And like Lazarus said, I mean, I don't want to belittle his casting choice and his choices, but it was like the butterfly effect a little bit. I think it was just some cool progressive kids who didn't have enough money to make the movie they wanted. So they made a horror film and it just exploded.
Yeah. All right, so Night of the Living Dead, it just made a huge impact culturally, critically, economically, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, yeah, 1968, Night of the Living Dead came out. Romero flapped his wings. It wasn't really until almost a decade later until he started flapping his wings again. You see? I'm just not going to let that butterfly effect thing go.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, in the next decade, there were all of a sudden a lot of flesh, well, a lot at the time of flesh-eating zombie movies coming out.
I think the appropriately named Dawn of the Dead, which was released in 1978, which is basically a decade after the first movie came out, hit. And we actually have questions for that, right? Or a question?
We do. We have a listener question specifically about Dawn of the Dead. And this question actually comes from my girlfriend. And we were watching this.
Hi, Levengood's girlfriend.
Sorry. Hi, Levengood's girlfriend. So she posited the question. Now, of course, she's saying this having seen, you know, dozens of modern zombie movies. But her question is, in Dawn of the Dead, why does Roger, that's the blonde SWAT guy who was teamed up with the black SWAT guy when they were in the mall. But why does Roger contract zombieism from a zombie bite, but not from having zombie blood splattered in his face?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because, I mean, and that's a good point, because in this movie, they are treating it as something that can be contracted, presumably by blood or saliva. Why not? Having blood splattered in his face. And after he got splattered in the face, when he was at the truck, they were getting the trucks to bring back to block the main entrance of the mall. I mean, he got blood all over his face, and then he wiped it away and smeared it all across his face and his eyes and over his mouth and everything. Why didn't he become a zombie from that?
Listen, I think this is my theory. You know, Roger, he's kind of an a-hole in the movie. You know, he's kind of a macho guy, kind of head first. But at the end of the day, he just likes to take care of himself. You know, I think, you know, when he comes home, he takes a shower, gets some Noxzema, and just wipes off all the zombie guts and blood off. And there you go.
You know, you should contact all those people who are worried about Ebola. You could solve a lot of problems real quick with the shower.
Just use Noxzema.
Well, once again, not to belittle the series, but, you know, we were talking about Roger and Peter, who are the two SWAT guys.
Peter.
Yeah, Peter. And with Dawn of the Dead, I think once again, they were just like flying by the seat of their pants. Like they were like, there was tons of new ideas every day. There was continuity errors with the, all right, so Dawn of the Dead takes place a decade after. Well, actually, we'll keep talking about this. So in Dawn of the Dead, there's continuity errors with like the screwdriver kill because they came up with that on the day. So I still think there was like a naivety to it, to where movies like 28 Days Later, when that crow blood dropped in that guy's eye and he became the thing.
Right.
I just don't think they were, you know, I don't think that they thought about that. Like, maybe they took a lot of Quaaludes that day. Maybe they just thought that would look cool. So I don't, once again, like, I think once again, it's just a choice that they made, and then it left a lot of people to question it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
I've got the reason.
Oh, okay.
I think this is me reaching real far. So in Night of the Living Dead, when they were showing little news, the news blips, right, about like, oh, people are just randomly killing each other. Scientists don't know what's going on. But there was one theory that they brought up in the movie, and that's that it was possibly caused by radioactive contamination from a space probe returning from Venus that crash landed on Earth. So I'm saying that this probe had some bacteria that somebody ate, right? And like all these other yeasts and bacteria that are in our intestines, it's like our gut bacteria flora. And so that's why you can contract it from a bite, but not by having zombie blood splattered on you. Because it's in the microbiotic fauna in the zombie's digestive system. That's my theory.
You know, Levin Good, I feel like if you were to write Romero fan fiction and if I were to read it, it would read like something out of a biology textbook. I'm like, am I reading fan fiction or am I studying for an exam right now?
Yeah, this is like the time during our What If podcast where Levin Good broke down an entire Predator film starring an old Arnold, old Danny Glover, and he literally breaks down every aspect of it. Like he wrote the script 3 years ago and has been tweaking it, and he's up to 112 pages.
Yeah. Wait. So now our listeners can't see this, but I can see what Mark looks like on the screen. And as I was explaining my bacterial gut flora theory, Mark's face, like he had his hand on his chin, he was looking up away from the screen. Like I don't know if he was trying to figure out what I was on at the time or if he was like testing the theory in his head. Mark, what was going through your head as I was just going off on this tangent?
I mean, I can sum that up in one word and just say sold.
See, I was taking notes because I knew there's probably gonna be an exam later on.
I think it's not a bad theory. It's not a bad theory.
No, it's really well thought out, like always, and like it seems very plausible.
If you told that theory to Romero, he'd go, "Yeah, sure,
yeah, sure."
He'll just flap his wings and go away.
Yeah. So, no, guys,
I definitely agree with what you said earlier, Mark. A lot of this movie seemed kind of just see your pants because there was some kind of kill scenes in this movie. It was just like really funny, but they also just kind of seem kind of sudden. Like the where Roger's trying to fuel up the helicopter, I think he sees a zombie come up, and like the zombie just like climbs a box. And he stands up and it just like the top of his head gets cut off.
That's like my all-time favorite zombie kill, though, in all the movies.
Really?
That's the best.
Really?
Yeah, it stands up on the crate. It lops off the top of its head. And Roger, the SWAT guy, like, he didn't even know the zombie was there. People were, like, calling, like, Roger, look out. There's a zombie coming. And he's like, the helicopter's going. He can't hear it. And then he looks over right as the thing is getting its head lopped off. He puts his hand on the holster, and then he just leaves it there and watches the thing fall.
It's just a look on his face that just makes the scene.
So
no, there's also like another scene. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But like, there's another scene where, you know, the zombies are like running through the mall. Some guy like gets his arm stuck in one of those blood pressure monitor machines. Whatever. The zombies take him. Right. The blood pressure monitor is still like monitoring the dude's arm. But then like it says like the display says like your blood pressure is odd or like way too high or something really cool like that.
Your blood pressure is 180 over dead.
Yeah.
And like the movie just had a sense of humor to it as well. You know, I was talking earlier about it and I love the movie, but every time I watch it, which is, I don't know, probably 18 times, every time I'm done with it, I feel exhausted. Like I just ran a marathon or just got chased by a Red Bull fueled 28 days later zombie. Like it wears me out. And if you guys are wondering, if you haven't seen Dawn of the Dead, or you maybe saw the remake, but it's about, you know, the world has been kind of taken over by the zombies, or not fully yet, but it's in the process. And these four survivors end up in a shopping mall. So it's brilliant. They end up in the shopping mall. They end up clearing out the shopping mall, locking it up, making it safe. And so while the world is going to absolute crap, they're inside the shopping mall living like these consumeristic lifestyles. And it just sort of becomes this consumeristic play on, you know, the world. And, you know, there's just, you know, the wars have gone on. People are still thinking about Vietnam. And so, like, I don't know. One thing that sticks out is Ken Foree, Peter. Like, he's playing racquetball. And then you cut to, like, the zombies outside. Like, we're living this life in this mall. No, but I don't know. I love Dawn of the Dead. And I've been researching Living Daylights out of it.
So, I feel like I need to bring it up just because there was a remake in 2004 of Dawn of the Dead by Zack Snyder. And it did very well, actually, in the box office and I think also critically as well. What are your thoughts on the remake?
I mean, it's empty. It's all empty calories. It's like Sour Patch Kids. Like, ooh, you know, you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Right? They're good.
Yeah.
But they're made well, but there's nothing to it that there's no message or anything. It's just a well-made zombie film.
I mean, yeah, and I liked seeing, you know, some of the remade scenes. Like they took the pregnant woman from the first one and this one, they advanced her pregnancy so that we had a zombie baby. You know, so some of the clashes between the characters obviously were over dramatized by comparison in the remake than in the original. You know, a lot more conflict, but yeah, I thought it was fun though. Yeah, as I recall, in the very beginning, the zombies were already faster in that, right? It was the little girl zombie in the house was the first zombie kill we saw, and it was the parents like, oh hey dear, you know, you can't sleep, and then she just charges the dad and bites his neck or something. So already they were kind of amping it up, you know, they were fast and furious sequeling it.
And you know what? I feel like you're right about those first two zombies in the Dawn of the Dead remake. Like they were busting through windows, they were sneaking in the houses, and then when you get 1,000 of them, they can't bust into a mall. So I guess right. It's the law of numbers.
Yeah, then the urgency is in the numbers and the futility rather than in the intensity of the skills of the zombie.
Yeah. But it should also be mentioned real quick that George A. Romero had nothing to do with the remake. So
I mean, he probably counted some like dollar bills.
Oh yeah.
But the Dawn of the Dead, man, I love it. Like I've been reading about it, and you know they filmed in a mall, a Pittsburgh mall, after it closed, so they shot at night. And what I like most is since I work on some film sets, and what I learned about it is they switched all the lighting out in the mall, so that when they went in at night, they could just turn them on and start shooting. So it was just like indie filmmaking at its best. Like Romero, he never gave specific directions to the zombies because if he said walk with your arms out, it would look like a thriller video. So he would just say kind of do what you want. And so like his initial zombie walks with these people doing it influenced zombie walking for years to come. And, I don't know. The zombies would go to a bar and get drunk and then come back and go on set and act. So he said that helped with a lot of the zombie acting.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And it was a bona fide, good film. Like, Dawn of the Dead was a good film. It had a good, what, Goblin soundtrack. Tom Savini did a fantastic.
This is the first Dead movie that he got involved in, if I just read this correctly. Yeah,
I believe so, yeah. And he still hates the blood. He thinks it looks too red. But Romero's like, whatever. It's like a big cartoon, so or like a comic book. So I like the blood.
Hey, Savini, just flap like your wings. Just flap your wings.
Yeah,
it looked like thick orange paint. Yeah. You know, Mark, you said something that at first I kind of resisted in my head when you said that the movie kind of wore on you. But upon further reflection, I kind of agree, is specifically with a lot of the third acts. After they've been there a long time, you see they're slow living, and then all of a sudden you have these hostile people, you know, this paramilitary biker gang. And then, like, yeah, you're just – it's not about the zombies. It's not about the psychology of the people under the roof anymore. It becomes just these mean people, and you have to see them try and survive that. And you feel good when you see some of those guys get their dues from the zombies. But mm-hmm. at the same time, like, yeah, that kind of was maybe a little beleaguering for me seeing that. But I thought that this movie was the most fun of them, because it had a what is it, Robert and Peter, they're running around the mall, they're kind of having fun, like they're running football drills, distracting the zombies to get their cart of supplies around, you know, they're like, I think we can do it, you know, they're smiling, there's buddy. I really like the dynamic that you know, Peter's really tall and Roger's really short. So there's the little feisty guy and the big tough guy, and the feisty guy's sliding down the rail of the escalators. So like that movie was a lot of fun, and that made sense because there was, you know, regardless of the level that we assess it, there's some consumerism satire in this. And whereas the first one, as far as I read anyway, I don't know about the source, they were saying, you know, the first one, if anything, was a reflection of the turbulence of the 60s. Whereas this one's more of a consumer satire is the backdrop.
Yeah, absolutely. And like a lot changed in those 10 years. The Galen Ross, the lead female character in Dawn of the Dead, she was like the opposite of Barbara. If you remember from Barbara from Night of the Living Dead, all she did was scream and yell and like she was like a hysterical woman. But in this one, Galen Ross, she's like, I don't want to scream in this movie and I don't want to run like a madman. So, like, even when that Hare Krishna zombie was coming after her, she was in danger, but she wasn't, like, screaming. Like, she tried to take care of herself.
Yeah, and she would have been, you know, like, one of the early, what I'll call vocally strong female roles. We've had strong female roles at this point, but they literally put it in words in the dialogue. Hey, there's four of us here. I want to be a part of the decisions that get made. You know, if she's talking to the guys who are making the plans. So she was really asserting herself.
Yeah. I mean, it was the complete opposite. It shows what 10 years did from Night of the Living Dead to Dawn of the Dead.
Why did it take Romero so long to make the sequel? Or was he just kind of biding his time?
Well, a lot of it was funding, and it took several years for Night of the Living Dead to hit big. And then also...
He did five or six movies as well. Yeah, he directed five or six movies in between.
Yeah. In between that. And then also Dario Argento flew Romero out to, Italy. And that's where he wrote... the script for Dawn of the Dead, and Argento gave him full creative control of Dawn of the Dead. Just Argento had to have his own cut for the Italian markets.
So he got flown to Italy to write a zombie movie. Life must be rough for Romero.
Yeah. But I mean, Dario Argento, he actually took out a lot of the humor in the Italian cuts. Like there's like six, if they were jerks, they would do the Evil Dead thing and just do like a different Dawn of the Dead Blu-ray each month.
Hmm. So there's a Dawn of the Dead cut without any of the humor. Are you sure that's not the remake?
Yeah. I mean, Ayo. It's ew. It's a classic. I think it was very much so aided by the fact that he had sole control of the film. Hmm. And I think that they were flying by the seat of their pants, and it was kind of like a nice happy accident. That I wouldn't say there's a lot of talent behind there. But it was a bunch of young guys getting their footing, and I think it's the best film that Romero made.
Yeah. No, critics apparently seem to agree with you because not really. Because it didn't get as high a Rotten Tomatoes score as Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead had 96%. Dawn of the Dead has a very low 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. Nowhere near the 96%. I'm sorry. Mark, you're just, man, you look flustered right now. Like, you just took like a punch to the gut right there.
You know why that is?
Why?
It's because more people alive today were alive when the second movie came out than when the first one came out. So a few of the fans who would have voted for the second one aren't around.
Right.
Wait, I got that backwards.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm
see, Love and Goods flustered too. Mark's flustered. I'm starting to get flustered. I think now's a good time to go to commercial break.
Red Bull break.
Yeah.
I'm getting like the hot flashes after you get bitten by a zombie. You get the feverishness.
Let's be honest. We'll still be flustered when we come back.
After the break, I'm going to be pale.
All right, guys.
Hey, guys. Mark here. And for you, the listeners of Movies, Films, and Flicks, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, today we've been talking about George Romero and the building of a zombie empire. Well, today I want to talk to you about a book called Shock Value. How a few eccentric outsiders gave us nightmares, conquered Hollywood, and invented modern horror. It's a book by Jason Zinnemann, and it talks about George Romero, Brian De Palma, Roman Polanski, and it just talks about the horror films throughout the 60s and 70s that have influenced pretty much all the movies, not all, but most of the horror movies that you watch nowadays. So if you're a horror buff, if you like what we're talking about today with George Romero, this book goes into much more detail, talks about the making of Night of the Living Dead. And it's actually, for a movie lover, it's very exciting. I love every second of this book, and reading it was a pleasure. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook. Make sure to check out Shock Value. If you do listen to it, just send us a message. Let us know what you thought.
When I say pod, you say
pie.
Wait a minute.
Whoa. What's going on, Kyle?
Take your headphones off real quick.
Okay, sorry.
John, what the hell is this?
Oh, I don't know. Robert invited me over.
And yeah, I don't know. This is kind of awkward. Are we doing like a promo or something?
I don't know. I wish he'd put on his pants, though.
Yeah, he's like dancing around. He's talking about Shark Dropper.
I think he's looking for the baby oil.
Anyways, Robert, what are we doing? Huh? What are we doing?
What was that?
What are we doing?
I can put my headphones back on?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing a promo for Shark Dropper.
Oh, okay.
That podcast we do that has improv, and we just talk about our daily lives and stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I still wish you'd find your pants.
Where can I find it?
Oh, wait. Are we supposed to wear sharkdropper.com?
Short shot time.
And we're back. And we're still flustered. I don't know. I forgot what we were even flustered about. That's how flustered we were.
Wait, I'm kind of flustered because you were just talking about blueberry Red Bull and you said it tasted like blueberries left out all day.
Yeah. Or blueberry pie. It's been sitting out all day.
That could have been the origin of zombieism, was like that guy in the graveyard in Night of the Living Dead. Before the first scene, he came across some pie someone left out like a week before in the summer. It was just sitting there like festering, if blueberry pies can fester. Yeah. It was just sitting there like a squirrel got to it, but then a bird landed on its head and it drowned in it. And then you have the squirrel body like rotting in it. And then dude came along and ate the pie and he became a zombie.
This is like Hansel and Gretel, but... zombies.
And somehow Romero is just filming all this.
It's a cautionary tale about eating things left on sills for too long.
Man, that Romero is just so deep.
How did you forget this pie for 2 weeks? Like, are you just... do you have stuff on your mind?
Listen,
it was a really, really old lady. She died of non-zombie natural causes.
Right.
Ah.
Now, listen, you're going to a school bake-off. You're baking pies, brownies, cakes, right?
You're really making a lot of stuff.
I know. Well, you're trying to raise that class trip to Disney World. So you're going all out, right? You pack everything you can, and, you know, sometimes things just get left out. You know, that's what happened with the blueberry pie. And that's how we ended up with 6 zombie movies from George A. Romero. There we go. You like that leap of logic?
Guys, we own that idea now. You know that, right? That's us.
Yeah.
If anybody steals that,
I don't think we have to worry about that, guys. Okay. So we've done Night of the Living Dead. We've done Dawn of the Dead. Like, let's see. Dawn of the Dead came out in 1978. Wasn't until 7 years later in 1985. It was a good year that Romero came out with his third movie, Day of the Dead. Night, Dawn, Day. I don't get it.
Oh, gosh.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, there's a clear chronology there.
I don't know.
Nah. What if I work at night?
Yeah.
Sleep during the day.
Yeah. Then you'll miss the zombie outbreak.
This is all just messed up.
So I'll be like Killian Murphy or Rick Grimes from Walking Dead or 28 Days Later. I just sleep through the initial outbreak.
If someone going in knowing nothing about this, like looking at all these movie titles, they would naturally start at Dawn of the Dead, right? Because you start your day in dawn.
So they go dawn, day, night?
Yeah. It should be all backwards. Like, well, not backwards, just totally messed up. I'm just like, huh, this is kind of weird. I don't know about this Romero guy. He's just too artsy for me.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh.
Okay, guys. Ooh, Mark, we had questions for Day of the Dead, right?
Yeah, John, you got them.
Apparently, we're still flustered.
We have some questions that I harvested from a series of Romero fan forums and fan websites. And
blueberry pie forums.
That's right. So, this first question is it's kind of a two-parter. In Day of the Dead, the zombie named Bub eats parts of a dead man, more specifically, not living flesh. It's not a body that he killed. So why don't Romero's zombies try to eat each other if they're fresh zombies? And moreover, in Day of the Dead, zombies walk right past a living alligator, and the movie explains their desire to eat flesh is purely from instinct. So why don't they eat other flesh, like, say, an alligator?
Bub one of the zombie? He was trained by the doctor to... Basically, he was trained like a pet, right?
Well, yeah.
So the maybe...
Bub was.
Yeah, Bub.
He listened to his awesome mix.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the answer, right? In Romero's later films, see, a little bit of background. He wanted this movie to be the Gone with the Wind of zombie films. However, the budget was dropped from $7 million to $3.5 million. So it was like originally very Land of the Dead, but he had to go kind of subterranean to save money. So he eventually wanted to build to, if you remember Land of the Dead, the zombies kind of went back to work. They went back to the gas station. Zombies were familiar with the mall, so they kind of maybe thought that was important to them. So I think if they're going on instinct, like maybe Bub... He knew what that was. He knew just by instinct, and later Romero films proved that he knew that was what he used to do. And I don't think many humans used to try to jump on alligators and eat them unless you're John on Red Bull, but yes. or bath salts. We are from Florida. Right. But I just think if we're in the Romero world, they are acting on kind of past impulses. So... They wouldn't eat the gator.
But why would the past impulse be to eat the chopped up pieces of a guy's arm or leg that were in a bucket that he was given as a reward?
Dude's hungry.
Yeah. Maybe he does beef jerky. Like, oh, some Jack Links here.
Yeah. So maybe in a past life, Bub liked Jack Links jerky.
Ironically, he eats blueberry pie, though. It's like,
no. I mean, I have more problems with his digestive system working. I don't know. I didn't really... Jeez Louise.
Mark,
it's funny you bring that up because in the movie, the scientist who they nicknamed Dr. Frankenstein, the character's name is Frank, he severs the connection from the body of every organ in a zombie except for its brain, and the zombie still wants to eat. So it's just, it's like an echo of a desire in the brain. It has nothing to do with a need to eat.
Mm. Oh... It just wants to eat.
Yeah, it's just the desire. There's no actual physical need for it to consume anything because he disconnected it from every other organ, and it still persistently would try and bite when he put his finger near its mouth.
Now, zombies are dumb, but I don't think they're dumb enough to try to eat a gator.
Well... Even the zombies don't mess with the SEC.
Yeah, if I'm sitting there... We're talking
about the football team.
ACC. I think if I was a zombie just kind of strutting along, I would have a strut, you know, because you could pull it off, be like, hey, it's my zombie walk. I would look at the gator and I'd be more worried about the gator because you can't really run away from it.
Although I will say if a zombie tried to eat Tim Tebow, it probably wouldn't go too well for the zombie. Like Tebow would like probably just chuck him and then like completely miss a easy pass and then some.
I imagine ew. Tebow would try to exercise them.
That's true.
All right. So here's what it is. Bub liked jerky, so he remembered that. So he ate the meat. And then zombies aren't stupid enough to attack alligators.
Yeah, okay. He was a Florida State man. He doesn't care for gators.
So that's my answer.
All right. So there's a follow-up question also about the zombie Bub. And this links into what you were saying before about connecting into Land of the Dead. So Bub listens to music and shoots his gun at a jerky captain. Did they make Bub too smart for that movie?
I just don't think physically that could work.
No, there was that scene earlier where, what's his name, Miguel first meets Bub, and they had the little thing with the gun, but the gun that Bub had was empty, right? It was a nice callback to that scene.
Yeah, what? I guess muscle memory, who remembers it. I don't know.
Yeah, he does a little salute after he shoots
him. The zombie literally was following that jerky captain, that total douchebag of a captain, down a hall, aiming the gun at him. Not lifting his arm like a zombie, but aiming the gun at him with two hands for support and shooting two times. He shot the guy.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it was too much because they regressed. If he was that smart, I feel like they regressed in Land of the Dead.
Like that, I mean, that zombie, don't get me wrong, he was getting one-on-one tutoring sessions, but none of those tutoring sessions had to do with anything more than introducing him to the notion of, here's a gun. You were a soldier in the past. You might recognize this.
Well, here's a thought. Maybe the doctor was slowly feeding Bub the pills from Limitless that Bradley Cooper was taking. It's just like, because it's a zombie brain, it doesn't have really the same effect it has on a human brain. So it was slowly working its way through this Bub system.
You know what? Just like a lot of Tim Tebow's colleagues were getting busted, he was giving that zombie Adderall. Yeah.
That's what it was. Bub was just giving Adderall.
I mean, I think that Bub got like a 1200 on his SATs as well. That was an unreasonable zombie.
Although, if he was taking Adderall, why was he eating so much? It's just,
I mean, that can't go anywhere. Their bodies literally do not work. Like, that food is not going to go through anywhere.
It'll go somewhere. It's just...
What do the people say? What, do you got hollow legs? Well, maybe Bub has? No, that's not true. all right, so guys.
Actually, this conversation actually brings up something I want to talk about. We mentioned it where Bub shoots Miguel in that elevator scene. I think this scene has my favorite just death scene, in not just in any zombie movie, but like in any horror movie in general. Where Miguel just opens the elevator, he just lets the zombies just kind of overrun him and take him. And I was just, if you're listening to this podcast and you've never seen this scene, just look it up, just pause the podcast, look it up on YouTube, and then come back. Right, so it's just, I was just astonished when I first saw this scene, right, when I was a kid. I'm just like, whoa, no way. It looks completely fake, like, but it's also really gory. Like, they just went for it. Like, Tom Savini just had, like, I don't know what he was on. I think he probably had, like, two cranberry Red Bulls. But it was just the zombies just tore into Miguel like he was a bag of marshmallows. And then, like, 3 seconds later, you see, like, zombies everywhere just, like, feeding on Miguel like something out of Golden Corral. Like,
and they literally, they're reaching at people's stomachs and pulling them apart with their guts just pouring out.
I was just astonished. Like, I remember at the time thinking, like, how are they doing this so easily? They're just pulling like limbs off like it was nothing. I'm like, oh man.
This is a giant marshmallow man.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh.
So guys, if you're wondering about Day of the Dead, it's the world's been overrun by zombies, and we are introduced to this underground bunker where there's two types of people, jerks and saviors.
Doesn't this movie take place in Fort Myers, Florida?
Yeah. That was they filmed the exterior shots in Fort Myers,
okay.
And then the exterior shots they filmed. I know he filmed everywhere around Pittsburgh, but they went to some like data storage place that was deep underground. yeah. that wrecked havoc with all the stuff, and crew members had to sleep there at night because it was so hard to get to. but this, I'm gonna tell you guys, this is not. I do not like Day of the Dead. I like the characters of Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, but the characters of Day of the Dead just felt so much like not characters. They were just, I don't know, they were just yelling at each other. They weren't really personalities.
Didn't have the same type of humor you saw in Dawn.
Yeah, really. It was just too, like, they weren't characters. Like, I don't know. Like, when a zombie has the most bub, his only name you remember, even though you were talking about Miguel. But, like, it was just a bunch of people yelling at each other and acting like jerks.
Oh, I had to look up Miguel.
Yeah, it was very hostile, and it was basically like a dogfight between military personnel, which in this movie were not depicted well, mm-hmm. and scientists who in this case were in the patient savior role, and it was just a lot of butting heads, and all the military people. I mean, it was a really unfortunate depiction, to be honest. But, there's the captain, and they're racist. Sexist would be a polite word. I mean, they make a lot of references to a lot of undesirable actions. I mean, yeah. They were bad, bad people running this compound, and especially the captain. He was pure evil.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of a meeting, he threatened to shoot one of the scientists if she got up and walked away from a table.
It's just, you're watching this and you don't really, I don't know. We've talked about this many times before. And for me, you need to care about the characters to care about the movie. And I just never got into them. I did like the zombie carnage. I thought Bub was a breath of fresh air, even as he was walking around with two hands shooting guns and saluting people. But I love what makes me mad about this movie is I love the idea of it. I feel like it's a practical idea, but the characters were just, they weren't Romero-like. And that's why I don't know. I guess that's why it's become the cult classic that it is, and it's divided into different camps.
Yeah, I also don't feel like the characters really developed. Instead, the story just changed around them. The characters didn't drive the story much for me.
Yeah, I think another thing that kind of diminishes the movie, in my view, is the fact that the first two movies, there was a type of social commentary associated with each of those movies. It's just, for this one, I'm not really, I have a hard time figuring out, like, is there some type of social commentary associated with this movie or not? I don't know. Did you guys pick up on anything?
I did not research anything, nor am I actually suggesting this is what Romero thought. I'm not saying I think that this is what Romero thought, but I mean, at the end of this movie, when I reflected on it, all I could think about was, again, this isn't my view, it's not Movies, Films, and Flicks view, but it was the very negative perception of military in my eyes. I don't know why. Maybe it was fear of... Maybe the commentary was the fear of military control if something like this were to happen. But I couldn't really express anything beyond that.
Yeah. And this is the movie I've watched the most recently. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
At the end of this movie, I don't want to high five anybody. A couple times during Dawn of the Dead, a couple times during that movie, I want a high five because it's kind of fun and some cool things happen. Even in Night of the Living Dead, there are a couple moments where you're like, yeah, you know what? That woman needed to be slapped. I can't believe I'm saying this. But she was hysterical. And so the guy slapped her to get her to refocus. Like, you know, there are a couple moments in that movie where I wanted to high five. The only things that would get me to high five in Day of the Dead aren't really just the level of ridiculousness of the experiments of that Dr. Frankenstein character on his zombie cadavers. And that's it. Like, severing all the organs and everything. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think of the original, or like the original trilogy here, Night, Dawn, Day. Day is definitely the weakest. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's not the crown jewel.
Right now, 2015, we're at the 30-year anniversary of Day of the Dead, and I'm
also
not
Back to the Future.
I'm not watching this movie again until we're podcasting about its 40th anniversary. All right?
And you know what? I think there is a loyal fan base to this film, but and they're very passionate about it, and maybe it's just because of the creature effects. But I don't I don't know. I don't get it. So,
yeah, as I mentioned before, it's just, you know, the only thing I really take away from this movie is the Miguel Duff scene. It just really messed me up when I was a kid. I'm like, oh, no, I'm never going to Golden Corral again.
And that Miguel character, he just took it, too. Like, he just curled up into a ball with the elevator, like this ground level elevator going down into the compound. He just curled up into a ball knowing they were going to tear him apart. Like, was there not a way to rig that with some tape?
No, a little
bit of tape could have.
I like how when Miguel died, it looked like he just fell asleep. That was the look on his expression. That was the look on his face. He was like, wake me up in the morning, guys.
Like, how hard could it have been to make the military and the researchers sort of on the same page? And maybe some of the people are suffering from PTSD or they're stir crazy or they're running out of food, or, you know, make their situation desperate and urgent. But down there in these areas with them, there's really nothing desperate or urgent. They had it all under control. So it's like, maybe it's like, after they build this community, people become themselves again. But that never played to me.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, man, if that's themselves, then that captain who was in charge was like a kid who like would kick puppies and use a magnifying glass on little creatures because like some spoiled brat, like he was evil.
Yeah. Wait, was it Captain Henry Rhodes? Was that the guy?
Yeah, Captain Rhodes.
Yeah, because he replaced Cooper. He replaced the character called Cooper, who we never even see in the movie.
Right. Okay, guys, I'm going to bring up the Rotten Tomatoes score again, and there's a good reason why. The first two rated very highly in the mid-90s. This one landed at around 82%.
So 96, 95, 82.
Yeah, 82, and, you know, this is the first of Romero's zombie anthology where it just the critics just like start to move away from him literally and figuratively. Like, he's just, it's spoiler alert, it's a downward slide from here on out.
Well, critically Ebert speaking. Ebert gave Dawn of the Dead 4 stars and he gave Day of the Dead 1 star.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that moves us on to
Land of the Dead, which didn't come out until 2 decades later, in 2005, actually.
Yeah, and
so there was a huge, huge wait for Romero fans during this time period. Well, as far as zombie movie goes.
And so Land of the Dead's about the living dead have taken over the world, and the last humans live in this walled city to protect themselves. And so it's kind of like that terrible, was it Elysium? Is that the terrible Matt Damian movie?
Yeah,
it's like Elysium mixed with like
The Hunger Games.
Yeah, The Hunger Games mixed with I don't know.
I just want film. Yeah, Dennis Hopper is in this. John Leguizamo.
He plays Leguizamo's my boy.
He plays like a badass zombie hunter or whatever. And there was also like this truck. I forgot what it was called that they rode around in. I think it was called The Reckoning or Dead Reckoning.
Yeah.
Or something, and that was just so badass. But yeah, I remember watching this movie in a theater, and I was actually working at the theater at the time. I actually saw this before everybody else. It was me and a couple of other kind of film nerds. We were sitting there, you know, we were all like, you know, we had just got done watching a marathon of the first three movies, and you know, we were just totally psyched for this. And we were watching this, and after the movie was done, we were like, man, this kind of feels like this is the same feeling I got after I watched Phantom Menace for the first time. You know, it was just so disappointing. It was just a huge disappointment. Like, it was just, I don't know.
I mean, listen, I love John Leguizamo. But then, like, it wasn't about, like, zombies are going back to their everyday life.
Yeah.
Like, they were back pumping gas. And but brain function, I don't think brains work like that. I mean, I don't know. Listen, guys, I'll be the first to tell you that I don't know much about, you know, brain function, neuroscience, zombies. But I don't think anything's sparking up there other than the urge to, you know, chomp on some stuff. So, I mean, I don't think they would be going back and pumping gas or like they were going back to their old bands. Remember when they were that gazebo, like the Dead Reckoning drives by and like there's some people playing their old instruments.
Yeah,
it's just I listen though. I like it more than this is gonna sound crazy, but I like it more than Day of the Dead because at least it tried to say something. You know, you have all the rich people in Fiddler's Green while there's, you know, they're protected. They're living this great life while everyone else is kind of dealing in the muck. All right, I get it. Cool. That's cool. But I don't know. It was huge. Remember, like, was it huge or are we just zombie fans and we thought it was a huge event?
I don't think it was a huge event.
For me, it was. I don't know. It was something me and my friends were talking about for, you know, months on end as soon as we found out that George A. Romero was coming back with his new zombie movie. And I think the disappointment kind of comes from the fact that, you know, between Day of the Dead and Land of the Dead, there was a 20-year wait for another George A. Romero zombie movie. But in between, you had all these other, you know, people come in with, like, their own zombie movies, TV shows, comic books. You know, these are all good. But, you know, when we found out George A. Romero was coming back, it's like, you know, he's going to show everybody how a zombie movie is done. And it wasn't, it didn't have the impact that we were hoping it would have. And it was just, I don't know, you couldn't help but feel a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I was mostly excited just to see, you know, a theatrical release of a zombie movie because we weren't exactly raining zombie movies in theaters at the time. There were lots of zombie movies, but, like, it's not like every year there were five like now.
Yeah, and, like Shaun of the Dead had hit. And, like, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost had cameos in Land of the Dead. So I kind of showed up, like, really excited for it. And I don't know, man. Ugh. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. I think they went for too big a scale, and they couldn't really make the scale work as well. I mean, is there that good cliche commentary about the clash of the caste system with the wealthy really still living their lives while the people who aren't wealthy basically all become poor living among the zombies? But other than that, like, it was just another zombie movie with some guns and John Leguizamo and motorcycles and
yeah. John Leguizamo named Cholo.
Hold on, it was Cholo Demora. I think that was his whole name. No, and I think Levengood, you're right. That's what makes it so disappointing. It's not a bad movie. It was just another zombie movie. And the fact that George A. Romero made just another zombie movie, there's just this huge disappointment coming out of that.
And, like, the character's name were, like Slack. And then there was, like, Riley Denbo and Chihuahua. Like, I don't know. It became more like a Blade Runner ripoff. And, see, that's why I love the first one. And it's kind of like, this is going to sound weird, but Jaws had a lot of talent behind the camera, but you couldn't recreate it because they couldn't recreate the production because the shark didn't work. They had to improvise. And I feel like a lot of Night of the Living Dead was like that, and Dawn of the Dead was like that. So they, you know, Romero had nobody to answer to. You know, people hadn't stolen from. All right, this is going to sound weird, but I think Romero is like a lot like Blockbuster Video. All right, this is going to sound weird, but just roll with me. So he's like Blockbuster Video, and or Major Video before that. Like, Blockbuster Video was like the trendsetter for years, but then Redbox, Netflix, Amazon, you know, on demand came out, and Blockbuster couldn't catch up, so they kind of closed. Like, Romero started everything, but then it jumped too far ahead of him, and so when he would try to make these kind of movies, they felt tired, like he was one step behind it. That's kind of like what became with his career. So he started off the trendsetter, but I feel like after the fourth film, it was just him trying to catch up, and it never felt fresh.
You know, speaking of freshness, George Romero once in an interview, when he was expressing what he thought made his concept of the zombie so scary, it had nothing to necessarily do with the flesh eating, with the contagion or anything like that. He said because with his zombies, he made the bad guys your neighbors. Because in the early movies, anyway, when zombies were new, before we had seen a bunch of zombie movies and knew all the rules, right? Well, the zombie is just some guy. It's a stranger, fine, in the very beginning, but it's just a person. We don't realize it's a threat. And then later, your friends or your family in the house with you are becoming the enemy. And it's horrifying because we even as viewers way back then didn't know that our mother could turn into a zombie, that our wife could turn into a zombie, that our best friend Frank could turn into a zombie. And so Yeah, even in the poor Frank. even in the second movie, that happens to the Roger character, the little SWAT guy. I mean, and Ken Foray is even nervous because he says, like, I've never seen anyone get bitten by them last more than 3 days. So he knows that he's going to have to kill his friend when his friend turns into a zombie. And so, you know, and after these two movies, it kind of became old hat. And everyone knows you get bit by a zombie, you're going to become a zombie. But that made it terrifying, right? So George Romero gave us that, and we didn't have that before. And then, you know, Romero's still trying to pump out movies with Land of the Dead. And I'm not saying that George Romero ran out of ideas, but maybe for his zombie dogma, he did run out of all the great stuff.
Yeah, and I don't really care about those zombies in the later films. Like, they're becoming more human. But that wouldn't happen. Once again, I am not a brain.
Even in Day of the Dead, the guy referred to the fact that the only part of the brain that seemed to be active was – it looked like he was pointing to the limbic system at the base of the spine attachment where all of our primal instincts are. So he was making it seem like it was the common denominator of behavior in animals, the drive to eat. And then later in that same movie, he's listening to music and he's holding the headphones on and he's shooting a gun and chasing a guy with a gun down a hallway. Like, already he seems to be defying that very notion that was presented about this almost primordial thought process.
Or maybe listening to music and shooting guns is part of our primal instinct.
Yeah, have you ever gone to a NASCAR event? I mean,
yeah.
What's that one song?
Panama.
I don't think there's too much hard dog.
Panama.
I just insulted all of our NASCAR fans. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you did. You just put our NASCAR fans on blast.
I'm sorry. Oh,
whatever,
all three
an SEC football event there. I brought it to my zone too. I'm wearing a Gators shirt right now.
So guys, before we carry on, tell me what happened to Frank Levengood.
Well,
our best friend Frank.
Frank got he stubbed his toe and a zombie was nearby and drooled on his toe, and because of that, it counted as a bite.
That's the lamest way to become a zombie.
And so
I stubbed my toe.
And so his hangnail turned on him. His hangnail zombified first, and it started attacking his other foot. I don't know where I'm going with this.
This little piggy ate the other toes.
I'm kind of flying by what were you calling him? Flying by my seat.
Frank, is this like the butterfly effect? Like, Frank has really bad luck. I imagine, like, he's been fired from his job. He's divorced. His kids don't respect him. You know, he's just doing what he can, and then a zombie slobbers on his toe because he's limping.
Oh, man. Oh, poor Frank.
If you're still out there, Frank, you're a zombie, so you can't hear us. Never mind.
Well, you can, because Bub had the headphones. He was listening to...
What's like the zombie playlist in 1985?
It's Goblin's Greatest Hits.
Yeah, Goblin's Greatest Hits.
Yeah.
It's definitely that time is on my side.
Maybe some Depeche Mode. They were around back then, right?
Depeche Mode. Are you just heavy synth?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh. It was the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Cyndi Lauper.
Zombies just want to have fun?
Yeah, there we go.
All right, so...
I do want to say, like, you know, Land of Dead, definitely not my favorite Romero zombie movie, but there is... I do enjoy Dennis Hopper's performance in this movie. He plays a scumbag. He knows he's playing a scumbag. And he just owns it. There's this one really short scene where, like, you know, he's trying to get away with, like, all the cash in the tower or whatever. And then, like, as he's walking out of the elevator with, like, the suitcases of cash, like, his colleague or associate or whatever, he's like, oh, what's in there? He was like, Dennis Hopper's like, oh, just, and then like his phone rings, like, oh, well, let me take this. And then he was like, oh, wait, look out behind you. Pulls out his gun. And then like there, dude turns around and Dennis Hopper just shoots the guy as he's turning around. And Dennis Hopper's like, well, there we go.
Listen, I like the way Dennis Hopper plays dirtbags because he's unapologetic about it. Like, yeah. The dude lives in Fiddler's Green. He is a dirtbag. There's nothing preachy about him. He is just Dennis. Like, if Dennis Hopper in real life, well, you know, back in the day when, you know, he was around. Mm-hmm. But Dennis Hopper, if he got control of Fiddler's Green, he would do the same thing. Like, he would rule just like that. He would build a sweet car, have John Leguizamo ride around in it, and the world would be happy.
I guess that just goes to show you what I thought of the movie, when that's the only thing that I can remember from
Fiddler's Green? Is that where he lived?
Yeah, Fiddler's Green.
You know, with a name like that, I just want to tug off one of my 14th century French velvet gloves and slap him in the face. Like, it's like, call it something better.
That's the way I like my villains, though. Like, he just got it. Like, he's like, I'm a dirtbag. I live in this place. I'm taking all these rich people's money.
Yeah.
I'm Dennis Hopper.
You never saw, like, a good side.
Should have called her spaceship world and Elysium. Fiddler's Green.
Oh, Elysium's the worst movie, man. Oh, my gosh. At least, all right, so this is what they should put on Land of the Dead's cover box, not Elysium.
Well, that was solid.
Movies, films, and flicks.
Not Elysium. Like, well, it's not Elysium, so I think I'll buy it. Is this on Blu-ray, sir?
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Okay, so Land of the Dead, as I mentioned earlier, we're on a downward slide. Critically speaking, this got a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's a lot higher than I'd expect, to be honest.
Right. But it's no 96 or 95%. Even
that number, I think, is riding the Romero love wave.
Yeah. It's like Phantom Menace. You know, when people, like, not everybody, but when a lot of people watch Phantom Menace, they were like, that's the greatest thing ever, because it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then they thought about it later. Yeah. And Empire Magazine's my favorite movie review website on the planet. And they gave, like, Attack of the Clones 4 stars. Like, 5 stars, the highest thing they could do. Because
it was the Yoda fight scene. It was the Yoda fight scene.
You're just, like, riding it. You're, like, riding. So I think everybody was fresh off that Dennis Hopper kill scene. And they're like, 72%!
Yeah.
Dude, but you mentioned, like, it later people thought about it and they weren't happy. It's like after, like, Darth Maul, yeah, pod races, yeah. Then later they're thinking,
Jar Jar
Binks. How many people called in sick the Monday after they saw this movie just thinking about Jar Jar Binks?
A zombie, yeah. Jar Jar Binks. I don't know. Anyway, so...
Oh, wait, one fact, guys. I want to go back before I forget. Okay. This is going to be really random, but in Day of the Dead, just going back to this for you guys, a couple things. The zombies were paid $1 in Day of the Dead, and they got a hat. Just want to let you know how low budget it was.
Nice.
And Mark Dodson, the guy who did the Salacious Crumb voice for Return of the Jedi, did some of the zombie noises in Day of the Dead. So, Guganini, zombie. So if you listen to our podcast, you know we love Salacious Crumb and impersonation. So I just want to.
You just sounded like Fozzie the Bear doing his impression of the Salacious Crumb.
Right. All right, here we go.
Guganini, Gugurana.
No, that wasn't that either. Who was that?
You're still Fozzieing.
Yeah.
Guganini.
No. There it is.
I don't know.
That's being resurrected from episode 4 of our podcast.
No, I think you're still
Salacious Crumb in the Sarlacc pit.
I think you're still at 20% Fozzie, but okay.
I just did it again. I can't shake Fozzie.
So I just want to say that, you know, Romero's zombie anthology can be split into 2 parts, trilogies each. The first trilogy, there was a significant time between each release. I'd say around 10 years. And the second trilogy, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, Survival of the Dead, the turnaround time was about 2 years.
Right? Yeah.
And I don't know. Do you think that's a factor in the low critical scores that Diary of the Dead and Survival of the Dead each got? Because they're sitting at 62% and 30%, respectively, on Rotten Tomatoes.
So this is going to sound like a really weird thing to say. I love the show Downton Abbey, right? So,
I knew it. Downton Abbey this whole podcast. I'm so glad you did.
All right. So I love the first season. Like, I love Downton Abbey. All right. But the first season, it probably took the creator, Julian Fellowes, years to write one season, right? So he comes out, he does 6 amazing episodes. And then as soon as that 6th episode is done, the BBC was like, all right, great. We need 13 episodes in 3 months. So he's like, what? So obviously there's going to be a quality decline during that time. So in the first few films with Romero, he had a decade in between them to write films. And so Day of the Dead fell through, but that's because of the budget shortages. He had to change the script. It went from 200 pages to 88, blah, 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 blah. But the next ones that he wrote were just kind of like reaction. Like, they weren't proactive. They were reactive to the times. So Diary of the Dead, he was trying to jump on, like, the bandwagon of, you know, Cloverfield came out at the same time. So he didn't have that much time to actually write good material. And so I feel like that's what categorizes the third trilogy, is they feel rushed and they don't feel as well thought out, and they do feel more preachy.
Yeah. I don't know. Mark, you've actually seen Diary of the Dead and Survival of the Dead. How do they... I don't know. Give me a quick rundown.
Picture this, guys. I watched Diary of the Dead when I was living in Korea. And I had some couch that I found. There's similar to Fiddler's Green, there was this like really wealthy high-rise next to me.
Was it Dennis Hopper?
Yeah, Dennis Hopper owned it. And they would throw out... Steve lived there. He's now a zombie. Frank, I'm sorry. And they would throw out good furniture. So I found a good couch there one day out on the dump. So my buddy and I carried this two-piece couch back to my apartment. And it was a great couch, guys. But so I remember setting it
up. Tell me more about the couch.
And, so I got a tiny – it was a nice little fold-up. It was lovely.
Nice.
And so I remember I watched Diary of the Dead on my computer. I had a bunch of Budweiser for some reason. I don't know why I had Budweiser. Maybe I was just missing some Bud.
Korean Budweiser.
Yeah, and Korean Budweiser. And, you know, I had a few in me, and I was really excited for Diary of the Dead. Like, I still had, like, a little Land of the Dead. I was hoping that Romero could recapture the magic. And I remember just sitting in the dark. I was like, I'm going to be scared. I'm going to watch Diary of the Dead in the dark with some Budweiser. And I remember watching it and being completely bored. I sat just, like, slack-jawed, staring at the computer. I think there's, like, a pizza on my belly just laying there. And, but, like, all right, so this is Diary of the Dead. It's a found footage film. It's just about how people try to downplay the initial zombie outbreak and how they're not telling us all the truth and blah, blah, blah. But the narrator of Diary of the Dead, she's like this the entire time. So the zombies are out there. We don't know where they're at. This world is going to hell. The military found us yesterday and they took all our food. We're going to keep going. We're going to go to an abandoned place.
So the narrator was an NPR.
Yeah. We're gonna try to find some sweaty balls.
Yeah.
And we're just gonna go around, and we're at this place now, but the world has just gone to crap. And we're here now, and there's a zombie. Wait, there's a zombie. No, that's not a zombie. That's Frank. That's Frank.
That's Frank.
No, wait, Frank is a zombie.
Yeah, wait.
Frank is limping. Frank seems to have stubbed his toe.
Oh. Frank. How you doing, Frank? Frank is a zombie. So now we're here and we're going, guys. And so it's just dark right now. The media is trying to hide everything, guys. And the world just doesn't. No one knows what's going on. It's just a big conspiracy. And the world's just not acting right, guys. And hey, Frank, get back here. Frank. He's a zombie. He doesn't listen to me. But the world.
So like, that's the whole movie, guys.
Yo, I'm not gonna lie. That sounded really relaxing.
I feel like I want to get that, you know, like on Audible or something to listen to on my drive.
Yeah.
That was kind of soothing. I could almost meditate to that.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah. You know, we're just driving in this. We have this Winnebago, and we were filming a horror film, and zombies came. And we cut the horror film, and now we're filming this, and my boyfriend died, so I took over. And, you know, the world, they're just hiding it from us, man. And, there's a zombie.
Wait. So this didn't work for you, Mark?
No.
This didn't, because it's working for us. Like, I maybe it's just that she wasn't as good at narrating as you were.
Or maybe it did work on Mark, and that's why the pizza was sitting on his belly. He was so relaxed, he forgot that he had a pizza.
I don't know whatever this actress's name is, and I don't want to look it up right now because I don't want to see the movie, but I'm calling her out for a narration duel with Mark for our next episode. And if young lady, if you don't actually call in, we're just going to assume that you forfeit and that Mark's a better narrator.
She actually calls in.
Look, we called out Tom Cruise. He didn't call in. Right. Wuss.
I really thought that was going to work. Hey, I really thought that was going to work.
Yeah, I mean, Pauly Shore spawned the weasel, which influenced Edge of Tomorrow. He never talked to us about it.
We've called him out. He didn't come out. Now it's on you, narrator person from...
all right, Mark. I want you, to narrate Survival of the Dead. Same. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so... let me finish off by talking about the end of Diary of the Dead. We're in a panic room, and we're not panicking because we're talking like this. And, the human race, is it worth saving?
Wait.
That's it. That's it.
That's it.
What was that's this it. Girl? Was she played by Kristen Stewart?
That's right, Mark. You sounded like Kristen Stewart's face looked all through Twilight.
It just never changed.
And it was constantly bewildered.
Oh gosh, it is.
You had that like when you narrate that, like I imagine a facial expression that just says, "Did somebody fart?"
But it was just like it's just so bad. It's just so, I don't know, man. Like, I think the most entertaining thing was like realizing that I had a piece of pizza on my chest and I was excited because I thought I was all done with them.
Dude, nothing's better than chest pizza. It's always a surprise. Okay, it always tastes the best.
Yep, for the Diary of the Dead Blu-ray cover, guys, from MFF, we want you to put chest pizza is the best thing ever. All right, guys, so I'm going to talk to you now about the survival of the dead. And the survival of the dead is about two families that are kind of like the Hatfields and McCoys.
Did you play Texas in Varsity Blues? Did you play like a Texas footballer? Yeah.
Hey, I don't want your life. I don't want your life, all right? I'm not going to take these steroids. All right, so this movie, Survival of the Dead, you got the Crockett's and you got the O'Flynn's. They're a bunch of bad actors who live on this island. And basically, one of the people, they're like, hey, we got to kill all the zombies. And then the other family's like, hey, we got to keep these zombies alive because we can take these zombies who really have no brain function, blood flow, and their bodies have shut down. We can turn them back into humans because that's possible. So the rest of the film is just about these two families fighting over, should we kill the zombies or should we keep them alive? And in the process, the worst of human nature comes out of us.
This is like the Hatfields and the McCoys in Varsity Blues on two rival football teams in a zombie apocalypse.
See, that actually sounds really entertaining, though.
It's not. The acting's really terrible. I watched it, and I just sat there with the – like, there was no chest pizza watching this. I sat there just, like, fuming the whole time. I was just like, ugh. Like, it just – like, ugh. Like, they're on Plum Island, and for some reason, off the coast of Delaware, there's two Irish families. And the old Flynn's want to kill the undead.
Did you know there's a large Irish population in Delaware?
Yeah, like, but the Muldoons want to keep the undead loved ones alive. But there's no – like, how can you keep – they're not going to come back to life. Like, there's really no way. Like, their heart has stopped. Their arteries are done. Their blood has coagulated. Like, they're not coming back. And it's just, like, the cheapest, dirtiest, poorly acted. It's like when Blockbuster tried to mimic Redbox by doing, like, their little Blockbuster red boxes that failed. Like, it just felt old and tired, and you just wanted Romero to – I don't know why he did it. It's just yuck.
Yeah,
it's almost sad talking about these movies because, like, in the beginning, we're so excited about Romero. Like, I just want to remember the first three Romero movies.
Yeah, because you know what, though? Even despite Day of the Dead's flaws, it had a personality to it, and its budget got cut. There was a lot of problems with it, but, you know, there was ambition there, and it still felt somewhat original. But the third three just yuck. Yeah, I don't know. Yuck.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. George A. Romero is often credited with inventing the zombie genre in films. Do you guys more or less agree with that?
Well, as far as flesh-eating contagious zombies go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, since, like, there were zombie films, but he invented the trope that is famous nowadays in Walking Dead, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So his most recent zombie movies aren't, you know, they don't rank as high as, like, some, you know, some modern day zombie films.
No. But, I mean, like, Rolling Stone, they did, like, the top zombie films, and the number one and two were Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. He's right. Made the best zombie films. Everything other than that is just kind of like, you know, taking the scraps off the table.
Oh, even all the other zombie movies that Romero didn't have a hand in, you know, they still owe a lot to Romero. Because he really set the stage and precedent for everything. Because in almost every Romero zombie movie, there's always, like, in the main party of characters, there's always someone who gets bit. Like, and it's just like they always turn. And you see that a lot in every other zombie movie. And for some reason, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I expect it, and it never disappoints me. And that's you know, that's just kind of the influence that Romero had. It's just this thing that he does in his movies that everybody else copies. And, you know, I'm glad they do it.
So. Well, you know, I'm not even going to make it the initial trilogy, but really Night of and Dawn of combined. But, like, those movies essentially were the equivalent of learning what the Matrix is in the first Matrix movie, or seeing, being introduced to the world of wizardry in the Sorcerer's the Sorcerer's Stone, the first Harry Potter movie, or the first Lord of the Rings movie. There's the magic of being introduced to this new world, this new notion, this new creature with a new set of complications that we've never encountered. And then after that, well, you know, a lot of people were disenchanted with the second Matrix movie or some of the later, much later Harry Potter movies because it wasn't as novel. We weren't being introduced to all these new fantastic alien elements anymore. And, you know, and that's why I think that his movies work a little less and less with each subsequent release. It's not even that he's not good at it anymore. It's that he's told the story already.
You know what? If you look at, like, this is going to sound random, but if you look at Godfather 1, 2, and 3, Godfather 1 and 2 are classics. If you look at Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, I love Return of the Jedi, but a lot of people hate the Ewoks, blah, blah, blah. If you look at, you know, the Matrix films, I love the first one, second one's okay, third one's terrible. The Aliens, Alien 1 and 2 are great, Alien 3 is divisive, 4 kind of goes to crap. So it's just the natural law of things. Like,
the novelty is lost, you're trying to blow things up too big.
Yeah, and so once again, guys, I'm not discrediting Romero. I think what he made was, you know, if you're talented, you can make happy accidents. But I do think, you know, the first two were novel and they were different and they were young and they were ambitious. They weren't sullied yet. And that's why I think that they were such great films, is because there was an ambition and a naivety to it. They made some mistakes that made the world what they are. And they were flying. They made, like, you know, they established a world that they didn't really intend on. Like, if you would have told Romero what the zombie world would look like nowadays back in Night of the Living Dead, I don't think Night of the Living Dead would have been as good because there would have been so many expectations. So we owe this guy a lot. And, I love zombie films. I love World War Z. I love the books. You know, Max Brooks wrote Zombie Survival Guide, World War Z. You know, whenever I'm at a Home Depot, I figure out how to fortify it. I mean, he's the guy responsible for that. And so, you know, I don't mind that he made those later three films because he can do whatever the hell he wants. But I do think the name Romero in zombie film takes such high expectations that, you know, if it's not Dawn or Night of the Living Dead, it's not going to live up to your expectations.
I guess what I want to say is that what George Lucas did for sci-fi fantasy is basically what, you know, George A. Romero did for the zombie genre.
Sure, you know, yeah, absolutely.
He didn't invent zombies, but he invented what the modern idea.
Well, he invented the zombie as moviegoers think of it today.
Yeah.
Well, and so despite the Kristen Stewart narration and the Hatfield and McCoy people talking.
Varsity Blues football.
Yeah. I will tell you what, if he makes a zombie movie, I'm going to watch it.
Same.
Just not Survival of the Dead.
Yeah. I wouldn't have high hopes for it. We're going on a downward trend. The last movie is 30%.
I really want to know the further stories of Frank.
Yeah. No, me too. All right, guys. I think, we've gone through all of the Dead movies from George A. Romero's anthology. He didn't just do zombie movies. He also did other, you know, sporadic horror movies. But, you know, I think we've covered the important stuff. But before we sign off, I think we should do some plugs real quick.
Okay, guys. I just want you to know that we're putting this now on paper. This is going into the Smithsonian. This is going into the records. The zombie outbreak was caused by an old blueberry pie from a woman who went on a bake sale
and died of natural non-zombie related causes.
Okay. Yeah. The thing is, if we're going to submit something to Smithsonian, we're going to need like some type of sample. Like,
it's a petrified pie.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's a petrified pie. Frozen. They froze it next to the remnants of John Carpenter's The Thing.
What? Where in the Smithsonian is this? Is all this?
Like, it's next to Kurt Russell's beard from The Thing
in the vault.
Oh,
yeah, the vault. And the bathtub from Psycho.
Okay, yeah, it's in the same vault that they show in the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's in the Vault of Horrors, which is in the deepest recesses in the Tales from the Crypt.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's in the dark side of the Smithsonian.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's only open on Halloween.
You know,
on the 13th.
I'll give a plug to a movie and a book, actually, just because the movie that Romero did that I can watch the most times in a row is actually Creepshow.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I think, the only movie that he did that he didn't write, because Stephen King wrote all the short stories.
Cool. Who did the Twilight Zone episode where there's something on the wing?
That was the one with William Shatner, right?
There's something on the wing.
There's
some
thing.
Who did that? Did George Romero do that? Oh yeah, is that it?
I have no idea.
Oh, I think now's a good time to say goodbye. We're all flustered again.
By the way, to our listeners, the Zombie Survival Guide is also available through audible.com.
There you go.
Yep. And World War Z. Yeah. audibletrial.com/shark.
That's right. Give it a click, folks.
All
right,
guys. Check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com to read all sorts of zany articles. I was going to say something snappy, but I'm just like, eh.
I repopulated the Hateful Eight with all Kurt Russell characters.
Oh, yeah. Check that out. Also, check out sharkjarber.com. And also, guys, I just found a pizza on my chest. Whoa.
Delicious. Wait, what kind of pizza is it? Is it a pepperoni pizza?
Well, it's a pepper. Okay. I think it's a pepper. It's either a pepperoni or my nipple.
So
that took a dark turn. Yeah. I don't want pizza anymore.
I'm gonna go back into the panic room now.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna eat this pizza. I've been your host, John Lossoff. Mark Hoffmeyer.
Panic room.
John, love and good.
Peace out. Pizza out?
Yeah, pizza time. Later, guys.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.